I'm Shelley Schlender from MeAndMyDiabetes.com. Barry Erdman had seen what diabetes could do when he was asked to provide counseling for a woman in kidney dialysis. He got to know her and care about her, and he watched diabetes lead to her toes being amputated, then her legs, and finally to her early death. Then in 2007, Barry was admitted to the hospital with blood sugars at the potentially fatal level of over 600. Barry now eats a very low-carb, high-fat diet. His blood sugars are typically in the 90s. He's found ways to do this as a vegetarian. Let's listen in as Barry Erdman tells his story. Barry Erdman, can you tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Well, first off, I'm a licensed clinical social worker in private practice in Boulder. I've been doing that for over 30 years.
And you also have a condition called diabetes. How did that happen?
Well, funny you should ask. Being a vegetarian, it never would have occurred to me that I would have the kind of disease or illness at this late stage of the game. I'm just about to turn 60. It was quite a shock. It was 2007, just after Thanksgiving. I was kind of ignorant. I had no information at all. I didn't really understand what diabetes was. But I would sit in my office every day, and there was a digital wall clock. And I started realizing that it was blurry. I couldn't actually see the time anymore across the room. So I thought, well, it's just time for my eye exam. I need to get stronger glasses.
Did you have anything else going on? Were you up at night urinating, or were you feeling extra tired or extra thirsty, or were you hungry for sweets?
I was drinking a lot of water and going to the bathroom a lot, but that didn't catch my attention. I didn't think much of it. It was the vision that got my attention. And even then, I didn't know that there was anything especially wrong. The eye doctor on the phone was asking me what the symptoms were, and I explained the going to the bathroom, and she said, you ought to go get a blood sugar test.
And so you went to the doctor's office, and they pricked your finger, or they took a blood draw to check how much sugar was in your blood. What did they find out?
Well, it was right around Thanksgiving. It was kind of awkward. My doctor sent the lab work in, and then he went off on vacation, and the lab work was sitting there.
So he wasn't that worried.
He said, you probably have diabetes. And I thought, what? I don't understand that. And he said, well, just wait for the results to come back. Well, I thought I was going to find out right away. It turned out I didn't get a call back from him because I learned later that he was out of town. But I had a friend of mine who is a physician call into the lab to get the results.
How high were your blood sugars?
550.
What is a normal blood sugar?
Below 100 would be nice.
So your blood sugars were 5 times higher than they're supposed to be.
My physician friend and some other people talked me into going to the ER. They took my blood sugar there. It was 625.
6 times higher than it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Still, I didn't understand what that number was. I don't think anyone really knows what the numbers mean unless they have a reference range or they know someone who's diabetic and understand what that's all about.
But that kind of high blood sugar, that can kill people that high.
I suppose so, yeah.
That must have been a shock.
Sitting there, I was just kind of thinking, well, I need to get back to work tomorrow. What am I doing in the ER so late? I should go home and get some rest. And they were saying, no, you're probably going to stay here overnight and have to cancel the day tomorrow. And I wasn't too happy about that. So that was my focus. It hadn't even sunk in yet at that point. They kept me overnight because I was so dehydrated. They had me rehydrating me with some solution, salt solution, I suppose.
Now, one reason that a person's dehydrated at that point is because there's so much sugar in their body's trying desperately to get the sugar out.
Going to the bathroom probably on the hour.
Your urine probably had huge amounts of sugar that your body wasn't able to handle, so you were dehydrated because of all of that.
I think so, yeah. 3:30 in the morning, the nurse is asking me lots of interesting questions, like, do I have a last will and testament, and who's the next of kin? And I thought, this is crazy. I'm just here because my eyes are blurry. I think somewhere between 3 and 5 in the morning, they brought in a folder from the hospital staff person who sits down with patients to talk about diabetes. She was away for Thanksgiving, and so they just had a folder with information for me to read. Because I wasn't getting much rest, I just started going through this folder, which I later learned was the American Diabetes Association recommendations. So that was a rude awakening to go through this pile of literature. Then at some point, they asked me what I wanted to eat for breakfast. My usual breakfast was a bagel or a banana or some granola and soy milk. they told me that I was on a restricted diet. And I said, no, I'm not. I'm a vegetarian, but I'm not that restricted. And they said, no, we can only give you half a bagel and half a banana because you have to have a different diet now.
Because you're diabetic.
Because I'm diabetic. So they were attempting to serve me a diabetic recommended breakfast.
Did it help your blood sugar stay level?
At that stage, I still didn't understand what that was all about. So I gladly ate the breakfast and later learned that my blood sugar was still going up.
You mean that the food that you ate for breakfast that was supposed to help your blood sugar stay down made your blood sugars go up?
That's what was going on. At the time, I wasn't aware of any of that. They were just taking blood sugar samples and telling me they were just keeping me there for a while and calling into the doc on call to find out what should be done. Right before lunch, they were telling me I could go home. Just as I was about to leave, they said, well, your lunch is here. And it turned out to be vegetarian lasagna. So I thought, well, that looks pretty good. I think I'll eat that. Since I'm paying for this, I might as well scarf it down. Before I was about to leave, the nurse came in to take my blood sugar one more time. She said, sit down. You got to get some insulin. You ain't going anywhere.
You mean after you ate the vegetarian lasagna, zoom, your sugars went up once again.
And that's the joke. I imagine now, in hindsight, that because of what they were feeding me, it was causing my blood sugar to go up further.
These people who treat diabetes, why were they giving you food that made your blood sugars go up?
Well, that's an excellent question. Someone ought to answer that someday. My guess is the dietitian in the hospital has their diabetes menu guidelines, and they were just following protocol.
The protocol to give you things like vegetarian lasagna that is full of starches and carbohydrates, that we're giving you half a bagel and half a banana. That's still a lot of carbohydrate for somebody whose pancreas doesn't produce much insulin.
That's correct. I think for anyone who's diagnosed with diabetes and they get their general medical advice from the doctor or from even someone who's a specialist in being able to sit down with you and explain what's appropriate, the guidelines don't necessarily help you to stay healthy. They help you to stay in some kind of regimen where medication and insulin is required in order to keep you eating what you're familiar with. They didn't require that I be on insulin. What was important was they had me set up with an endocrinologist the next day.
Oh, so while you were in the hospital, they did give you some insulin to bring your numbers down to a place that weren't so dangerous. But then they said, get out of here and go see an endocrinologist right away.
Well, they happened to have set me up with one of the better endocrinologists in town, and I was able to get an appointment the next day, and that's when I started the real education on what's needed.
You went to see Mel Sternholm, and he believes that diet can make a big difference in whether or not somebody's blood sugar stay in control. What did he tell you?
He had a reasonable plan. He said, just begin eliminating anything that starts with the letter P. Potatoes, peas, pizza. He spelled bread with a P. He said to do better, you need to eliminate the carbohydrates.
Goodbye, pasta.
Goodbye, pasta, right. It turns out those are vegetarian staples for anyone who subscribes to a vegetarian diet. Rice and pasta and bread is something you would never think of being unhealthy.
Not only do most vegetarians consider those healthy, but the American Diabetes Association says that people are fine eating those in kind of half quantities, meaning not as much as before, but they can still eat them. Do you believe that anymore?
I believe that that's what they tell people. For myself, I've learned quickly that it's better not to eat any of that and to eliminate that completely. And I feel fine being able to recommend to other diabetics that the best way to stay healthy is to avoid carbohydrates at all costs.
That must have been a long road of deciding, or was it quick for you because you didn't want to have diabetes?
It was quick in my case. A memory that I had early on was some years ago, I was called in from the mental health center to work with a client who was diabetic in dialysis, in the dialysis unit here in town. Dialysis, as many people know, is when you have no more kidneys and you have to be hooked up to a machine to filter your blood. It could be 6 or 8 hours several times a week.
And dialysis is more common among people who've had diabetes a long time because diabetes, if it's not controlled, can destroy the kidneys.
That's right. So at the time, as a mental health clinician, I was there with this Hispanic woman who they told me was suicidal. when I got to interview her, I found out that she was considered suicidal because she was drinking too much water. They were warning her to go home and not drink much water, suck on some ice cubes. And it was the summertime, and she was very thirsty and was drinking water more than they were recommending she drink. And they thought that she was suicidal and that she was losing her will to live.
Because she was thirsty, and if you're a dialysis patient, you have to limit your water intake.
That's right. So weekly, I'd go over to the dialysis unit while she was there. We'd pull the curtain, and we have a nice chat about her life and what she was going through. There wasn't much discussion about diabetes then. It was more about personal concerns. Then one day I came back in to visit with her on our regular appointment time, and she had a bandage on her toes. And I asked her what was going on. She said, well, she had to have some toes amputated.
Because she's a diabetic.
There's something going on with diabetes that affects circulation in the body, and it affects the extremities first.
Well, and so her toes had perhaps lost their feeling. They'd been scratched or something, and they'd gotten gangrene or some horrible infection, which meant they had to be amputated.
That was kind of a sad moment for her, but she wasn't so discouraged. But each week that I returned to work with her, first it was toes, then she had a foot amputated, then she had her leg amputated up to the knee, then the other leg. Then finally I came in one day and she wasn't there, and I asked the nurses, where was she? And they said, oh, no one called you? She passed away last week. So that was my rude awakening to what diabetes is all about. Sad that that's the case, and it's totally preventable, and has a lot to do with how we take care of ourselves.
Well, and so you left the hospital. You were told that you had diabetes. You talked with a diabetes expert who said, stop eating carbohydrates. And when you thought about what would happen if you did not, you could picture this woman who had kidney dialysis and amputations and eventually died of her diabetes.
It's the firsthand experience of being with someone who's suffering, being with them in that kind of empathetic dialogue as a therapist would be with a client, to really understand deeply what impact a chronic disease can have and what toll it takes on someone's emotional state and spiritual state and how it affects themselves and their family and shortens their life. Hard to erase that. That's a memorable moment when you care about someone and then they pass away slowly before your eyes. Now I have this disease. I ain't going to lose my toes. What do I got to do? Immediately I thought of a friend of mine who I'd known for many years who also was type 1 diabetic, and remembered that he also was in dialysis. He had kidney failure. And so I immediately called him up and said, hey, Tommy, can I come visit you in dialysis? I want to check in with you and talk a little bit more about what you've been going through. Went over to the dialysis unit that he was in, and he happily invited me over and sat there with a room full of perhaps mostly diabetics who were there who had kidney failure also. And he began to remind me of his story of how he was diagnosed early on in life. He was a tried and true vegetarian and thought when he was diagnosed that if he ate brown rice and organic vegetables that maybe he could lick it.
Does he cut out carbs?
It turns out that he is, like many diabetics, reduced carbs and tries to stay away from them. But at his late stage, because he's dependent on insulin and had no kidneys left, he tries to be careful, but I noticed in having some meals with him that he would eat things that I wouldn't eat.
Like what?
He might have some potatoes or peas or some of the vegetables that have more carbohydrates in them than I'm comfortable eating.
Well, you observed all this, and you observed him in the kidney dialysis unit. What did this lead you to think?
I became highly motivated to do everything I absolutely could to avoid the scenario of perhaps needing insulin, and also like him, naively thinking maybe I could lick this some way, and I don't know, but I'm going to try hard at least for a while and see if I can reverse some numbers or if I can prove the doctor's wrong and maybe there's some way that my pancreas can heal and can perhaps produce more insulin.
How is your friend doing?
Sadly, he's not doing very well. He's moved from the area, so I'm less in touch with him now, but he's continues to have very complicated health problems.
How are you doing?
And I'm happy to say now that my blood sugar numbers are pretty close to being normal, compared to someone who doesn't have diabetes?
Well, when you went into the hospital, you had blood sugars somewhere around 500, 600, five times higher than normal. What is the range of your blood sugars now?
My fasting blood sugars are in the high 90s, sometimes low hundreds if I snack the night before. After I eat a meal, I rarely see it go above 120.
There's a number called the hemoglobin A1C that tracks the average blood sugar roughly over the last 3 months. What were your hemoglobin A1Cs when you went in to the hospital, and what are they now?
My A1Cs at the hospital was 11, and I thought, well, that's a small number, no big deal. But now I know that anything below 6 is preferred. My last A1C is down to 5.4.
When you went into the hospital, your hemoglobin A1C, that measure of average blood sugar over 3 months, was double what it's supposed to be in terms of being in the safe range. And now it is below the threshold that is considered dangerous. It's below 6. One more question before we go on. What would you say about your weight before you went into the hospital?
When I would go to the Nine News Health Fair every year to get my blood work up and go around the different health booths, I was told that I was overweight, and I was shocked because I have always been fairly active and I thought healthy. After switching to a low-carbohydrate diet, I pretty much dropped 30 pounds within a few months, and then an additional 10, a little stretched out.
Were you hungry? Were you consciously trying to lose weight?
Losing weight was never on the agenda. It just sort of was a side effect of switching my diet and changing my lifestyle routine.
Well, Barry Erdman, you cut out carbohydrates and you lost weight. Did you just eat fewer calories or did you eat something else besides carbohydrates?
I was mindful of eating smaller portions of what I was eating and became pretty strict in cutting out specific food groups like all grains, for example, and also continuing as a vegetarian, increasing certain foods that I wasn't really eating much of before. So increased my intake of eggs and nuts, particular kinds of nuts that I wasn't really partial to before. And eliminating fruit. I think that's the biggest tricky one because I love mangoes and tropical fruits and, of course, had a sweet tooth. And since switching over to a low-carb, high-fat regime with moderate protein, I don't have the sweet cravings anywhere near as where I used to prior to being diagnosed.
Well, you're eating more fat, you're eating fewer carbohydrates, you're not eating all that much protein, but you're eating enough. How many grams of carbohydrate a day do you think you eat?
I don't spend a lot of time trying to count it, but my guidelines are to shoot for 12 carbohydrates for lunch and 12 for dinner, lower for breakfast time, probably around 6 carbohydrates or less.
Let's do the math here. 12 plus 12 is 24 plus 6 is about 30 grams of carbohydrate a day is your rough ballpark. The American Diabetes Association says that if anyone has fewer than 100 grams of carbohydrate a day, it can mean that they have poor brain function. How is your brain?
I had a lot of trouble prior to being diagnosed with focusing, paying attention, especially after lunch in my office. And looking backwards, in hindsight, I realized how much I was struggling, and no one told me anything about what was going on. Since changing my diet, not only do I feel 20 years younger than ever before, my mind is sharper, and I have a greater capacity to work with people and to think and to function better than I can remember.
Barry Erdman, the American Diabetes Association, says that if you have fewer than 100 grams of carbohydrate a day, it might impede your health, and it certainly will mean that you have less energy. And you're eating around 30 grams of carbohydrate a day.
Well, let's not pick on them too much. Let's just focus on what is important for people to know.
I guess I'm bringing them up because most people, the American Diabetes Association is where they get their advice on how to take care of their condition. If somebody is in a standard public health program, if they go to a doctor, if they go to a registered dietitian, they are very likely to hear advice that undermines somebody's attempt to be eating a very low carbohydrate diet and one that's high in fat. So there is a large institutional bias toward these other diets where some of the science behind them doesn't seem to match in with what you're finding for yourself on a high-fat, low-carb diet. So that's why I'm picking on them.
Well, while I join you and believe that is true, I think the dilemma is much greater than that. What we really are facing is our own global beliefs about food and food production and what is a healthy diet and what's a balanced diet. The ADA and our medical consultants, even if they were to recommend what you and I are discussing today, very few people would be able to accomplish and feel successful at taking on such seemingly restricted guidelines because of the way our culture is, because of our lifestyle, the way that we depend on going out to eat and the way that we cook and prepare food at home. It may be that with the influence of drug companies and with the facing the difficulty in changing a culture, the advice that the ADA gives is kind of like shooting for what's doable rather than what's ideal.
Well, you're doing this, though. It's not just an ideal. You are doing this kind of diet. What do you have for breakfast?
Breakfast is my favorite meal. Each morning I have two or three eggs in the way of an omelet, stuffed with green leafy vegetables or onion or pepper or mushroom, often with cheese, sometimes just cheese alone. In addition, I usually prepare a kefir drink, homemade kefir.
Now, kefir is a fermented milk drink where the microbes have eaten most of the sugar out of it and left behind a lot of other nutrients and microbial health.
The reason I've chosen to have kefir drinks in the morning is because of the fermentation process, the natural fermentation process, where the bacteria and the yeast grow off of the sugars in the milk, the lactose, and about a third of it turns into lactic acid. It has a yogurt kind of consistency or flavor, but it's a little better than yogurt because there's additional probiotic benefits that occur in the fermentation process.
Well, that's what you have for breakfast, is this combination of an omelet and a kefir drink with a little bit of blueberries. Now, is it a cup of blueberries or is it less?
Oh, we're talking about maybe 10 or 15 blueberries.
All right, you're cautious on having a lot of blueberries because they don't have a lot of carbohydrate, but you don't want to have very much. You want to have less than 6 grams of carbohydrate in that breakfast.
That's right.
Do you have any snacks in the morning before lunch?
Oh, I'll snack on some raw or organic cheese, or I'll have some almond butter or almond nuts sometimes for a snack.
And then what about for lunch?
Because of my work schedule, I'll just have some foods that are brought in with me from a leftover meal. Sometimes it'll just be raw salad with olive oil. Sometimes just snacking on avocado and flaxseed crackers or some other things I might bring in.
Sometimes it's just a salad. Well, a lot of people think a diabetic needs to constantly have a little bit of something sugary along just in case their blood sugar starts to go low. It doesn't sound like you're doing that.
No sugar. We rely on stevia if we want some sweet snacks or sweet drinks. And the fat helps you to feel satiated and takes the cravings away.
Do you find that you have a mid-afternoon crash eating this way, or does your energy stay more stable?
Energy is very stable, no crashes at all. Nothing anywhere near as what I was doing before when my blood sugar was going up and down so frequently.
What about for dinner? What do you eat?
Dinners oftentimes are stir-fried green leafy vegetables, tempeh dishes. Sometimes we have a stir-fry or curries or stews over something called shirataki noodles, which are high-fiber noodles, very low or no carbohydrate. Dinners are fun because oftentimes people say, what could you eat? Do you only eat vegetables? When I think about the joy of cooking and the way of preparing food at home, there's so much diversity and variety of tastes and flavors. It does take some time. I don't mind having shifted my lifestyle to spending more time shopping for quality fresh produce, organic produce and taking time to cook at home.
You have all kinds of recipes that you've created and friends have created that are lower in carbs and are all vegetarian. And you've created a website where people can exchange these ideas.
Well, we have a blog on Facebook or a group on Facebook where people from around the world who are diabetic and subscribing to vegetarian lifestyle are chatting and exchanging personal stories and recipes.
You don't eat very many cashews. Why is that?
Cashews is off the list. My doctor said spell things with P. So cashews are spelled with a P in my mind because when I think about what nuts are healthy, I'm looking at what are low carbohydrate nuts with high fiber and fat and which ones are higher carbohydrates. And cashews are higher in carbohydrates. So as hard as it was, because I used to love eating handfuls of cashews before, I think, okay, if I eat cashews, I'm going to get sick. I'll have my toes amputated. If I eat almonds, I'll be healthy and I'll be able to go for a hike. So in my own mind, I kind of do that kind of visualization at times to justify or to keep myself motivated.
You know, you suggested something else once, which is that anybody who has diabetes perhaps should find some opportunity to go visit a kidney dialysis center.
You know, what was so striking to me after being in the dialysis unit and then looking at the diabetes magazines, the cover of each of the magazines usually had some luscious piece of chocolate cake or someone enjoying eating a dessert. The cover would say something like, you could eat anything you like. And when you read the article, it says, well, as long as you have a small sliver or a smaller portion, you can indulge. I often thought what they should be doing is showing someone with their legs amputated eating that piece of cake on the cover of the magazine, because that really tells the true story of what goes on.
I hear you saying that you don't eat that kind of cake anymore. You don't eat just small portions of cookies and pastas and grains.
I still am tempted and want to eat sweets and desserts at times. My commitment is to invent or find recipes that substitute and recreate the same kind of pleasure of eating certain desserts, but finding out how to design them or develop them or create them with low carbohydrates in mind. So flour-free desserts, sugar-free desserts still are part of my diet on occasion. Turns out I feel guilt-free eating things that I know are keeping my blood sugars in a normal range.
And you can think about that kidney dialysis unit where you told me once that it's such a tough place to be in. It's a hard place even for people to work.
It's a place with a lot of sadness and depression. People don't enjoy sitting there for most of their waking hours hooked up to a machine that's trying to purify their blood. People are very affected at that stage of life and don't have a lot of freedom. They can't really do things the way they used to if they're dependent on sitting in that room several times a week. It's not a happy place. It's not like a child care center where kids are running around playing. These are people at their latest stage of life who are facing loss and grief.
You'd rather not be in a sad place like that yourself 3 times a week.
I don't think anyone deserves to be living their life that way.
As a result, you found a way to eat and a way to live where your energy's better, your alertness is better, your blood sugar numbers are healthy numbers. You can make gourmet meals, vegetarian, without the carbs.
Anyone who's interested in improving their health deserves to take a careful look at their diet and what they're eating and how they're eating, and know that no matter what you're doing, you can do better. There's other ways to make improvements. Perhaps we should just mention Dr. Richard Bernstein's book, Diabetes Solution. He, being a diabetic himself, has spelled out what the science and the rationale is for eating low carbohydrates and maintaining a long, healthy life, being able to do all the things that anyone else would be able to do, even if you're diabetic.
You've been listening to an interview recorded in December 2011 with Barry Erdman. His website for people seeking vegetarian, low-carb recipes is on Facebook. I'm Shelley Schlender. Thanks to Walt Schlender for our music. You can find related articles and audio at meandmydiabetes.com.